Content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Fred Woodward for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading to you from The Week magazine. Today's program is underwritten by the law firm of W.G. Alexander & Associates. Alexander attorneys provide top-rated and experienced legal counsel, concentrating on estate planning, elder law, special needs, and asset protection. Call W.G. Alexander & Associates at 919-256-7000. And we are in our second reading from the year-end issue of The Week, titled The Faces of 2021. The next new issue will come out in 2 weeks. And we did some of the current events last week, and we'll hit the year-in-review items this week. But we'll start with the editor's letter. This is a dark time in a dark year. It began horribly with violent assault on the Capitol intended to stop the peaceful transfer of power, a first for our nation. The climate showed us where we're headed as biblical droughts baked the West and sucked reservoirs dry. 115-degree heat waves paralyzed Portland and Seattle, and a polar cold snap froze Texas solid. Forests in the western U.S. and world exploded into flames. Monstrous tornadoes, almost never seen in December, erased communities across Kentucky and the Midwest. The pandemic we thought we'd beaten in the spring roared back twice through Greek-lettered mutation-disguised variants that have filled hospitals and morgues with the voluntarily unvaccinated. In this season of renewal and hope, it takes real effort to find optimism about the future in our sore, beleaguered hearts. We can reasonably hope the pandemic will wane this year, at last, after holding humanity hostage for more than 2 years. But there's no reason to expect an end to another viral epidemic of misinformation and tribal hatred that endangers our democracy. Americans no longer share common facts, information, or trusted sources and experts. A virtual secession has already occurred. Extremists are pushing the parties further apart. And on the right, a radical anti-democracy movement is gaining momentum. Three retired U.S. generals warned this week that a disputed presidential election in 2024 could cause a total breakdown of the chain of command along partisan lines and actual civil war. If that sounds nuts, remember that 2 years ago, an insurrection and a pandemic were just as unimaginable. In the face of so many troubles and woes, what do we do? For perspective, I often think back to what my parents' generation faced and how dark it must have felt as 1941 gave way to 1942. Then, as now, surrender was not an option. Curse the darkness. Fight. Persist. The light is coming. Eventually. That was from editor-in-chief of The Week magazine, William Faulk. And we'll go right into the year in review. This is a long month-by-month summary of the stories of the year. So settle in and enjoy. January. The new year begins with Joe Biden preparing to take office as president on January 20th. But President Trump vows he won't leave the White House without a fight. On January 6th, he tells a crowd of rabid supporters in Washington, D.C. that the election was stolen, warning, if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore. Thousands of rioters march to the U.S. Capitol, smashing windows, trashing offices, and chanting, hang Mike Pence. The vice president and lawmakers are forced into hiding as 140 law enforcement officers are stomped, sprayed, tased, and beaten with American flagpoles. Five people died during or after the melee, including a police officer and a QAnon follower shot by police, and four Capitol Police later commit suicide. The insurrection fails to stop Congress from certifying the election results, but it is the first time in U.S. history that a president tried to block a peaceful transfer of power, and 10 Republicans joined House Democrats in voting to impeach Trump for an unprecedented second time. Meanwhile, Democrats squeak out both runoff elections in Georgia, gaining control of a 50-50 Senate. Inside a barricaded security zone patrolled by 25,000 National Guard members, Joseph R. Biden Jr. becomes the 46th president, vowing to end our uncivil war and restore the soul of America. February. Biden halts construction of Trump's border wall and proposes a path to citizenship for 11 million undocumented immigrants. At Trump's impeachment trial for stoking an insurrection, 7 Republicans join 50 Democrats in voting 57-43 to convict. But since conviction requires a two-thirds vote, Trump is acquitted. In a scathing speech, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell accuses Trump of a disgraceful dereliction of duty. Spooked by record turnout propelling Biden to victory in numerous swing states, GOP lawmakers in 28 states introduced bills to curtail mail-in voting and drop boxes and to make it harder to cast ballots. As an Arctic blast of single-digit temperatures paralyzes the southern U.S., an electrical grid failure in Texas, which failed to harden its generating facilities against the cold, leaves millions with unheated homes and more than 150 dead. As Biden marks the grim, heartbreaking milestone of 500,000 Americans lost to the coronavirus, he pledges to reverse the COVID vaccine rollout's dismal failure and deliver 100 million doses in his first 100 days in office. March. Congress passes the $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan without a single GOP vote, sending $1,400 COVID relief payouts to most families, extending the federal unemployment benefits, expanding the child tax credit, and providing $350 billion to bail out state and local governments. With asylum seekers overwhelming the southern border, the Biden administration is forced to house migrants in a reopened, overcrowded Texas tent facility. Monthly, U.S. gun sales set a record as a shooter targets Atlanta spas, killing 8 people, including 6 women of Asian descent. Another gunman slaughters 10 people at a Boulder, Colorado supermarket. April. Former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin is convicted of murdering George Floyd, whose ghastly death under Chauvin's knee in May 2020 sparked global Black Lives Matter protests. Just 10 miles from the courthouse, a white cop mistakes her gun for her taser and shoots Dante Wright, one of at least 64 people killed by law enforcement during Chauvin's trial. Racial tensions are further inflamed when Georgia Republican Governor Brian Kemp signs SB 202, restricting the use of mail-in ballots and ballot drop boxes and requiring absentee voters to show state-issued ID, which experts say will disproportionately reduce black votes. Georgia-based Coca-Cola and Delta Airlines join dozens of companies denouncing the law, and Major League Baseball pulls its All-Star game from Atlanta. McConnell warns corporations to stay out of politics. May. Every U.S. adult is now eligible for the COVID vaccine, which is proving remarkably effective at preventing serious illness. Coronavirus deaths hit a 10-month low, and daily fatalities in most states fall to single digits. Biden's proposed $6 trillion to reshape the U.S. economy draws comparisons to Franklin D. Roosevelt's New Deal. But Republicans and some Democrats complain that spending is out of control. Selective amnesia about the January 6th attack sets in among GOP lawmakers, who face threats from Trump if they challenge his stolen election big lie. Representative Liz Cheney of Wyoming, the number 3 House Republican, is booed and stripped of her leadership post as punishment for her unrelenting criticism of Trump. and Republicans blocked the formation of a bipartisan, independent commission to investigate the Capitol attack, arguing it would be slanted. June. Biden receives a warm welcome from world leaders at the Group of Seven summit in England, but back home his political honeymoon is ending. Inflation is up 5% over the past year, with the cost of used cars, gas, home appliances, and other goods soaring as a result of supply chain problems, labor shortages, and increased demand. Federal agents apprehend more than 188,000 migrants at the U.S.-Mexico border, the highest monthly figure in 21 years, fueling charges that Biden's reversal of Trump's harsh policies is encouraging Central Americans to make the journey. In the Senate, Republicans filibuster a sweeping bill that would override GOP-written state voting restrictions. To the frustration of progressives, Democratic Senators Joe Manchin of West Virginia and Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona say they won't support eliminating or changing the filibuster rules. At the urging of Republican Governor Ron DeSantis, Florida's Board of Education joined six other states in banning the teaching of, quote, critical race theory, a catch-all phrase the GOP uses to describe saying that racism played a major role in American history and that systemic racism remains. Conservative think tanker Christopher Rufo takes a bow for his scheme to turn CRT toxic, saying, the goal is to have the public read something crazy in the newspaper and immediately think critical race theory. July. Rescue workers finish sifting through the wreckage of Champlain Towers South, a 13-story condo in Surfside, Florida, that abruptly collapsed as residents slept, killing 98 people. Hundreds more die as a result of the most intense heat wave in the recorded history of the Pacific Northwest, which melts power lines as temperatures hit the 120s. While earthlings despair about climate change, billionaires Richard Branson and Jeff Bezos blast into suborbital space aboard private rockets. The U.S. misses Biden's goal of vaccinating 70% of adults by Independence Day after conspiracy theories, skepticism in majority and in minority and religious communities, and tepid encouragement from GOP leaders caused the vaccine campaign to stagnate just as the highly infectious Delta coronavirus variant becomes the dominant strain in the U.S. Having killed hundreds of thousands of people in India, Delta swamps hospitals in the South yet again, leading Alabama Governor Kay Ivey to say, it's time to start blaming the unvaccinated folks. August. Despite a major outbreak in Florida, DeSantis prohibits businesses from requiring vaccines and school districts from requiring masks. His disdain for COVID restrictions makes him a rising GOP star. A one-time Democratic hero of the pandemic, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo, is forced to resign after 11 women, including 9 state workers, accuse him of unwanted groping and creepy comments. Biden follows through on his decision to withdraw all U.S. troops from Afghanistan, and the 20-year, $2 trillion campaign ends in chaos. Taliban fighters overtake Kabul after the Afghan army folds with little resistance. Afghans, terrified of Taliban rule, rush to the airport, and military helicopters evacuate staff from the U.S. embassy, evoking the fall of Saigon. 13 American service members and about 170 Afghans are killed in an airport suicide attack by the terrorist group ISIS-K. The U.S. frantically airlifts out about 130,000 people, but thousands of Afghans who'd worked with Americans are left behind. September. Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott signs 2 politically explosive laws. One bans 24-hour voting, drive-through polling places, and sending unsolicited applications to vote by mail. practices implemented in 2020 that boosted turnout in urban areas. Abbott also signs the most restrictive abortion law in the country, putting a $10,000 bounty on anyone who performs or abets an abortion after 6 weeks of pregnancy. With a Delta surge killing 1,500 Americans every day, Biden orders vaccination mandates for employees of large businesses and most health care workers, a move Republican governors called tyranny and federal judges later block. In California, Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom easily defeats a recall effort. October. Democrats face mounting problems. Biden, damaged by the Afghanistan debacle, surging COVID infections, and the border crisis, sees his approval rating tumble to the low 40s. 19 GOP senators, including McConnell, helped pass a $1.2 trillion bill to repair the nation's crumbling infrastructure. But House progressives refused to send it to Biden's desk until Senate centrist Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin pledged support for Build Back Better, a $3.5 trillion human infrastructure package. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg takes another drubbing after a former employee leaks documents showing the company knowingly amplified divisive content, including right-wing misinformation, in order to drive user engagement. Americans' division is put on display at school board meetings where screaming parents denounce mask mandates and demand a ban on CRT. November. Virginia gubernatorial candidate Glenn Youngkin taps into this fury, promising to ban the teaching of CRT on day one. The Republican wins in a state Biden carried by 10 points just a year earlier, fueling fears among Democrats of a 2022 midterms wipeout. Children get their first COVID shots as many adults roll up their sleeves for a third. The House finally passes the infrastructure bill. The 13 House Republicans who vote for it are condemned as traitors by Trumpist Republicans. Trump advisor Steve Bannon is indicted for refusing to testify before a House panel probing the January 6 attack. Despite continuing revelations of Trump's efforts to stage a coup, the ex-president's grip on his party is as strong as ever, with more than three-quarters of Republicans saying they want him to run again. A jury in Kenosha, Wisconsin, finds Kyle Rittenhouse, 18, not guilty of all five counts after he tearfully testifies that he fatally shot two Black Lives Matter protesters and injured a third last year in self-defense. Another racially charged trial ends with three white men in Brunswick, Georgia, convicted of murdering a black jogger, Ahmaud Arbery. December. Discovery of the highly mutated Omicron variant sparks global alarm amid evidence it is even more infectious than Delta and better able to evade immunity from vaccination and prior infection. The Supreme Court's conservative majority declines to rescind the Texas abortion ban, and during oral arguments on a Mississippi law banning abortion after 15 weeks, signals it will reconsider Roe v. Wade, setting up a possible political earthquake just before next year's midterms. A 15-year-old in Oxford, Michigan, kills four fellow students and injures seven with a handgun his parents bought him as a present. Manchin says he won't support Build Back Better, killing it for now. As the year concludes, it's clear that the dominant stories, COVID, the January 6th insurrection, gun violence, extreme weather, the fight over abortion, will continue to dominate the headlines in 2022. And that concludes the week's Year in Review. Another of our year-end features is a summary of the poll watch, broken into various categories. The way we were in 2021, we worried about the pandemic and partisanship, but found escape in smartphones and snacks. So to the question, how are we feeling? Divided and discontented, 74% are angry about the state of the nation, and only 14% think our democracy is doing well. 46% think a civil war is likely, and 52% of Trump voters and 41% of Biden voters believe it might be best to split the country. Financial problems are adding to our bleak mood. 70% say the economy is doing badly, and 55% that inflation has made it difficult to afford food. Many of us can't stop worrying about COVID. 24% think the pandemic will never end, and 32% say they're so stressed out by the coronavirus that it's a struggle to decide what to wear and what to eat. Yet despite all this misery, 59% of Americans say they're currently thriving, the highest number in more than 13 years. Who do we blame for our woes? The man in the Oval Office. 58% say President Biden hasn't paid enough attention to the nation's most important problems. 56% that he's not a strong leader, and 60% that he lacks energy. We're also not impressed with his former colleagues on Capitol Hill. 60% disapprove of the way Congress is doing its job, and 58% are ready to dump their local representative in the 2022 midterm. How has society changed? In some ways, we're more open-minded. An unprecedented 70% now support same-sex marriage. 67% say having a baby outside of marriage is morally acceptable, and 20% are okay with polygamy. 63% oppose laws that would limit transgender rights, but 72% say there are only two genders, and 62% that people should stick with the gender they had at birth. We're increasingly easygoing when it comes to drugs. A record high of 68% support legalizing marijuana, but a substantial minority of Americans have no tolerance for the unvaccinated. 29% say they've stopped talking to friends or family who won't get the COVID shots. What are we afraid of? Plenty. 81% worry about another deadly pandemic hitting America. 58% that a loved one might catch COVID-19. 57% that a country could be consumed by civil unrest. The specter of a hot war with China has 71% of us rattled. 61% worry that a nuclear war could erupt. 57% of us believe in ghosts. 39% in visitors from other planets, and 27% in Bigfoot. And there's some anxious carnivores, with 26% believing that there's a movement to ban red meat, which 59% say is essential to the American way of life. And what do we do to relax? Screens figure heavily into our downtime. 46% regularly binge-watch TV for more than 2 hours at a time, and 67% play video games, half of them for more than 7 hours a week. But nothing commands our eyeballs like our phones, which 57% use for 5 or more hours a day. 48% think they're probably addicted to their phone. Snacks are another obsession. 48% have stashed treats in hiding places at home, and 43% will scarf something sweet or salty when they need a mood boost. That might explain why 42% have put on unwanted weight since the start of the pandemic, with an average gain of 29 pounds. Still, 40% are confident they could spring from the couch and compete in at least one Olympic sport. The way we were in 2021. There's a technology article on the next page that I'm going to go ahead and read for you. Security, a software backdoor left open for years. Cybersecurity experts have spent this month racing to patch one of the worst vulnerabilities in the history of modern computing, said Frank Bajak in the Associated Press. A flaw in a widely used snippet of software with the cryptic name LOG4J could let internet-based attackers easily seize control of everything from industrial control systems to web servers and consumer electronics. The data logging tool was designed by the nonprofit Apache Software Foundation, a group of volunteers who create open source or free software. Developers use it in applications for the mundane purpose of simply recording users' activity, later allowing programmers to retrace steps to improve the code. The flaw, which some researchers say has existed since 2013, was first reported in November by Chinese tech giant Alibaba. It then took 2 weeks to develop and release a fix. You probably haven't heard of Log4j, but it's everywhere, said Brian Barrett in Wired.com. Plugging in Log4j instead of building your own logging library from scratch has become standard practice. And all hackers must do to exploit it is send a malicious piece of code and wait for it to get logged. As companies work to patch the code, bad actors are storming in with 100 new hacking attempts every minute, said Joe Tidy in BBC.com. One cybersecurity expert compared the ease with which hackers could exploit this vulnerability to someone figuring out that mailing a letter with your specific address written on it could allow them to open all your doors in your house. Apache is now the focus of both praise and scrutiny, said William Turton in Bloomberg.com. The group has contributed crucial components of global commerce through its open source projects, which are produced by programmers who share their code and are not paid for their contributions. When the flaw was reported, several volunteers worked around the clock to fix it. But researchers say Apache should have heeded warning signs that Log4j may be vulnerable beginning in 2016. The average application today includes more than 500 open source components, said Richard Waters in the Financial Times. Code designed by Apache is bundled together with many other components to make the apps that customers buy, and many organizations that use programs like Log4j probably don't even realize it. This isn't Apache's first crisis. Another project called Struts figured in the breach at Equifax that led to one of the biggest thefts of personal records. Open source software began as a crazy-sounding experiment to bring fairness and independence to technology, but groups like Apache have become too influential to exist without more focus on secure coding techniques. The health and science summary for the year is broken into several categories. Some of the things they said were good for us, and some of the things we were told to avoid, and the scientific breakthroughs of 2021. We'll do a sampling from each of the categories. Some of the things they said were good for us. Black coffee may reduce the risk of heart failure. Researchers examined data from three long-term health and diet studies involving 21,000 Americans. Those who drank at least one cup of Joe a day without cream or sugar had a 5 to 12% lower risk of heart failure than those who didn't drink coffee at all, while those who drank two or more cups had a 30% decreased risk. The apparent benefits were not seen among decaf coffee drinkers. Coffee and caffeine are often considered to be bad for the heart, said senior author David Cowell. This study turns that assumption on its head. Short naps could boost brain function. Researchers examined the sleeping habits and brain functioning of more than 2,000 adults over age 60. They found that those who took a nap, defined as a post-lunch doze that lasts between 5 minutes and 2 hours, performed significantly better in health checks and cognitive assessments than those who didn't. Sleep expert Neil Stanley says napping helps you zone out from all of the noise so your brain can do its housekeeping. Clean teeth may help stave off dementia. Previous research has found that gum disease-causing bacteria can produce a roving protein that destroys brain cells. For the new study, scientists tested gum swabs and cerebrospinal fluid samples from 48 people, all over age 65. Those with higher levels of good oral microbes had lower levels of amyloids, proteins linked to cognitive decline when they build up in cerebral arteries. As suspected, those individuals who had a lower chance of developing dementia. Study author Angela Kramer says the results showed the importance of the overall oral microbiome, not only of the role of bad bacteria, but also good bacteria. Full-fat dairy is linked to a lower risk of cardiovascular disease. Researchers examined the dairy fat intake of more than 4,000 60-year-olds and followed them for an average of 17 years. After adjusting for lifestyle factors, they found that those with the highest level of dairy fatty acids in their blood had the lowest risk for cardiovascular disease and no increased risk of death from all causes. Lead author Kathy True says the study suggests that avoiding dairy products such as full-fat cheese, milk, or yogurt might not be the best choice for heart health. Some other things they said were good for us: evening workouts, double masking, and an occasional drink. Some of the things we were told to avoid: ambulance sirens may do more harm than good. Research has shown that ambulance drivers engage in more risky behavior when they're running hot, and that confused motorists can respond to them in unpredictable ways that increase the risk of an accident. Loud sirens can also increase patients' stress levels and lead to premature hearing loss in first responders. Sirens typically shave off only between 42 seconds and 3 minutes per journey, but for many calls, the time saved makes no difference in patient outcome. Time-dependent health emergencies, said Dr. Douglas Kupas, are a very tiny minority of the EMS calls. Video meetings are more exhausting and stressful than those conducted face-to-face. Scientists identified 4 factors behind Zoom fatigue: the need for constant eye-to-eye contact, seeing one's own face on screen while talking, having to sit still for long periods, and the challenge of interpreting body language. On Zoom, said lead author Jerry Balinson, behavior ordinarily reserved for close relationships, such as long stretches of direct eye gaze and faces seen close up, has suddenly become the way we interact with casual acquaintances, coworkers, and even strangers. Social media can cause depression in adults. Starting in May 2020, researchers spent a year surveying 5,400 people about their mental health. Those who went on Facebook, TikTok, and Snapchat were much more likely to say they had become depressed than people who didn't use social media, even after accounting for factors such as isolation during the pandemic. Experts say the feelings of jealousy that social media can trigger may have been accentuated during lockdown. Lots of intense exercise may be bad for your health. Researchers had 11 healthy men and women do a high-intensity interval training, HIIT, regime for a month, in which the workouts get steadily longer for the first 3 weeks. In the first 2 weeks, volunteers got fitter, with better blood sugar control and more total mitochondria, the tiny power plants inside cells in their leg muscles. But in the 3rd week, they couldn't generate as much power while cycling and their mitochondria produced 60% as much energy as before. Lead author Michael Flockhart suspects mitochondria get overwhelmed by the biochemical changes inside over-exercised muscles. Other things we might want to avoid? Makeup, ice packs that may hamper the healing process, and diet soda, which can increase food cravings. A few of the big scientific breakthroughs of 2021. Taking flight on Mars. Some 117 years after the Wright brothers made the first powered flight on Earth, NASA repeated the feat on another planet. Carried to Mars in the belly of the Perseverance rover, the 4-pound, $85 million Ingenuity helicopter has carried out 17 flights so far. Flying on the red planet is no picnic. The Martian atmosphere is less than 1% as dense as Earth's, so there is virtually no air for a helicopter's rotor blades to push against and generate lift. And temperatures there can drop as low as minus 130 degrees Fahrenheit. NASA hopes to send more sophisticated drones to Mars that will be able to carry scientific instruments to areas inaccessible to wheeled rovers. "We're breaking a lot of ground," said robotics engineer Teddy Zanatos. "The important thing is what comes next." Vaccinating against malaria. The World Health Organization has recommended the widespread deployment of the world's first malaria vaccine to children in sub-Saharan Africa, a landmark decision that could save tens of thousands of lives each year. "I longed for the day that we would have an effective vaccine," said WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus, a former malaria researcher. "Today is that day." Known as Mosquirix, the vaccine has been administered to more than 800,000 children in Ghana, Malawi, and Kenya under a pilot program. It has relatively limited efficacy, preventing 39% of malaria cases among young kids. But when young children were given both Mosquirix and antimalarial drugs together, there was a 70% reduction in hospitalizations and death. A brain implant for depression. Scientists have developed an experimental brain implant that has allowed an American woman with severe depression to alleviate suicidal thoughts the moment they occur. The researchers monitored the brain activity of the patient, identified only as Sarah, to identify regions that were active during depressive episodes. They then found other parts of the brain that could effectively turn off these feelings when pulsed with electricity. The implant constantly looks for brain activity associated with depressive thoughts and delivers a short burst of electrical stimulation to interrupt the signal. "When I first received stimulation, I felt the most intensely joyous sensation," said Sarah, "and my depression was a distant nightmare." We have a number of Critics' Choice lists for books, movies, music, TV. Too much to get into the whole thing, but I think I'll take the top one from each list, read you that review, and then give you a summary of the others. So under the review of books, this is the year's best novels. Number one, The Love Songs of W.E.B. Du Bois by Honoré Fanon Jeffers. The debut novel from a celebrated poet, this 800-page work is many things at once, a moving coming-of-age saga, an examination of race, and an excavation of American history, says the editors of the New York Times Book Review. Ailey, the central character, is three at the outset. Quickly, she is a teenager on a path toward college. The black girl at a mostly white high school and her curiosity about the secrets in her family stay with her as she, as well as the reader, uncover stories that trace back to Ailey's Native American, Scottish, and enslaved African American ancestors. As the novel jumps between her forebears' gripping personal histories and Ailey's moral education, the book becomes an unforgettable portrait of black life. Jeffers write powerfully about terrible times, said Colette Bancroft in the Tampa Bay Times. Her novel chronicles centuries of black American experience, from the endless horrors of slavery to the microaggressions of 21st century graduate seminars. But she also writes warmly about good times, especially those shared by mothers and daughters. It's not often I get to the last few chapters of an 816-page book and wish it wouldn't end soon. The other four on the novel list are Matrix by Lauren Goff, Clara and the Sun by Kazuo Ishiguro, No One is Talking About This by Patricia Lockwood, and Cloud Cuckoo Land by Anthony Doerr. For nonfiction book, the number one critic's choice is Empire of Pain by Patrick Radin Keefe. If you are up to no good, the last person you want reporting on you is Patrick Radin Keefe, said Laura Miller in Slate.com. The latest book from the New Yorker writer and author of Say Nothing is a masterfully damning history of the Sackler family, laying out how two generations of the Klan corrupted the pharmaceutical industry and eventually made billions by marketing and selling the opioid OxyContin as a non-addictive painkiller. The deceptive marketing techniques pioneered by Arthur Sackler and continued by his heirs ignited an addiction epidemic that is killing tens of thousands of Americans every year. Keefe seems to have run down every dark detail. Like Gilded Age barons before them, the Sacklers sat atop a massive fortune, behind a fortress of lawyers and corporate privacy screens, while their company pushed OxyContin out into America, said Hillary Kelly in nymag.com. It's a blood-boiling story of American apathy, of a family more concerned with putting its name on museums than keeping people from harm. The second one is Crying in H Mart by Michelle Zauner. Then All That She Carried by Tia Miles. A Little Devil in America by Hanif Abdurraqib. And All the Frequent Troubles of Our Days by Rebecca Donner. The Critics' Choice Top Album of the Year is titled Tyler the Creator, Call Me If You Get Lost. Tyler the Creator just keeps getting better, said Eric Skelton in Complex.com. 2 years after winning a Grammy for Igor, an album on which he moved decidedly away from rap toward an idiosyncratic blend of pop and R&B, the 30-year-old rapper, singer, songwriter, and producer returned with a rap release that's the most technically impressive album he's ever made, featuring some of the best beats of his career and easily his best rapping. Beyond its opening boast about jet-setting success, this record is really about guilt, said Charles Holmes in TheRinger.com. Tyler made his name as hip-hop's nihilist incarnate, an angry 20-year-old willing to spout ugly thoughts to grab attention. But while his latest album often sounds like an ode to the mixtapes of his youth, its true heart is revealed in Wilshire, a late track in which he remorsefully describes a tryst with a friend's partner. What a discovery. All it took to make the best rap album of the year was for the music industry's resident goblin to feel something. The other albums on the list are Jasmine Sullivan by Ho Tales, Japanese Breakfast by Jubilee, Floating Points, Pharaoh Sanders, Promises. And I think I've got the titles and the artists switched on that. I apologize. Finally, the artist is Olivia Rodrigo, and the album is Sour. I guess I showed how current I am on music there. My apologies. The review of films. These are short, so I'll read the first two and then give you the rest of the list. Critics' Choice, the top 10 movies. Number one is The Power of the Dog. Jane Campion's sinewy, cold-blooded Western sticks and teeth into you so fast and furtively that you may not feel the sting until after the credits roll, said David Ehrlich in IndieWire.com. Benedict Cumberbatch plays a cruel rancher in 1920s Montana who bullies his kind-hearted brother and his brother's new wife, but unexpectedly softens towards another newcomer. Kirsten Dunst co-stars in this murderous fable, and the whole thing exudes a tremblingly quiet strength. Number two is Drive My Car. Drive My Car is one of the most ineffably beautiful films to come along in years, said Joe Morgenstern in the Wall Street Journal. Based on a Haruki Murakami story, Ryusuke Hamaguchi's subtitled masterpiece follows a widowed theater director from Tokyo who is re-energized by an unlikely friendship with his taciturn chauffeur, a young woman coping with her own grief. Among many other things, it's about figuring out who other people are and why they do what they do, by first understanding ourselves. The rest of the list is Summer of Soul, The Worst Person in the World, Licorice Pizza, The Survivor Part 2, The Lost Daughter, The Green Knight, Passing, and finally, Come On, Come On. And we'll finish our list with the Critics' Choice for TV. Again, they're short, so I'll read the first two and then give you the rest of the list. Number one on TV, Succession. Okay, so there are no likable characters in this brutally sarcastic portrait of the American ruling class, said Matthew Gilbert in the Boston Globe. But what's that got to do with fun? Watching the morally bankrupt Roys tear one another apart after renegade Scion Kendall mounts a mutiny against his mad king of media mogul father was worth the 2-year wait following season two. In late 2021, Succession dominated the TV conversation for good reason. The scripts were spikier than ever, the characters more twisted. And that's on HBO. Number two is Hacks. It's not easy to make a good TV show about comedy, said Kristen Baldwin in Entertainment Weekly. But the creators of Hacks were beyond wise to build the project around Jean Smart, the reigning Meryl Streep of tough broad types. Smart plays Deborah Vance, a celebrity comedian whose run as a Las Vegas headliner is slipping away when her agent assigns a surly Gen Z comedy writer to restore the icon's relevance. We watch because the series focuses not on the work of writing jokes, but on the gifted and deeply flawed women who tell them. That one's on HBO Max. The others in the list are Reservation Dogs, which is on Hulu. The White Lotus is also on HBO. The Underground Railroad is on Amazon. WandaVision, Disney Plus. Only Murders in the Building is also on Hulu. Maid, M-A-I-D, is on Netflix. Mayor, M-A-R-E, of Easttown is on HBO. And finish out the list with Ted Lasso on Apple TV Plus. And we'll circle back to the talking points page for the time we have left. There's an article, COVID, healthcare workers at a breaking point. The looming tidal wave of Omicron cases is about to crash down on healthcare workers who are already in a dark place, said emergency physician Craig Spencer in TheAtlantic.com. For nearly 2 years, we've endured 12-hour shifts in cumbersome protective gear, intubating desperately ill patients and watching families sob on grainy FaceTime calls while their loved ones slipped away. Emergency rooms are overwhelmed and over capacity, and our usual empathy has been supplanted by physical and emotional exhaustion. Every day I hear the desperation of providers who've been at the bedside of too many patients that didn't make it. We began the pandemic many waves ago by asking citizens to flatten the curve, but the next curve could truly flatten us. Hospitals across the nation are raising the alarm, said Ken Altucker in USA Today. In Minnesota, where hospital hallways are crowded with COVID patients awaiting empty beds, 9 health system CEOs ran full-page newspaper ads warning that the state's medical workers are overwhelmed and heartbroken and urging citizens to mask, vaccinate, and boost. In Rhode Island, the association representing emergency doctors warned the governor that the healthcare system is on the brink of collapse. Traumatized staffers are leaving in droves, said Maggie Fox in CNN.com. Nearly 1 in 5 healthcare workers have quit since the pandemic began, according to a Morning Consult poll. They're worn down by a continuing emotional grind in addition to the physical fatigue, said Minnesota emergency physician John Hick. Facing surge after surge, it feels like you are drinking from a fire hose. Knowing so much of the illness and death we face was avoidable compounds our agony, said emergency physician Rob Davidson in the New York Times. At my overburdened Michigan hospital, an overwhelming majority of COVID patients are unvaccinated. Watching them suffer and die is profoundly sad, but more and more we feel frustrated and angry. Meanwhile, the highly transmissible Omicron stands to destabilize our health system in yet another way, said Peter Holtz in the Los Angeles Times, by infecting large numbers of healthcare providers. If that happens, we could face a nightmare scenario that will affect anyone who needs emergency care. Another overwhelming wave of unvaccinated COVID patients cresting, even as the fully vaccinated healthcare staff calls out sick. Online porn, warping young minds? Billie Eilish believes porn really warped her mind, said Barbara Kay in the New York Post. The Grammy-winning singer told radio host Howard Stern her ideas about healthy sex and relationships were damaged by online porn, which she started watching at 11. Eilish's experience is not extraordinary. With porn composing a third of all internet downloads in the U.S., habitual porn exposure is a pandemic amongst young people. Many, like Eilish, start with entry-level porn before sliding into more violent content that has had to get darker to arouse jaded appetites. And it is suffused with hatred for women. The sex depicted on these sites is terrifying. Dominant violence, said Judith Woods in the Daily Telegraph. There is choking and spitting and angry misogyny. Women are degraded, used, and discarded. And it's all freely available at a few keystrokes on a phone. What are parents supposed to do? Some say we should talk to our kids about porn when they're as young as 8. 8? You first. Actually, those conversations are a lot easier than you think, said Cindy Gallup in independent.co.uk. Parents should tell children that just as we watch movies, videos, and cartoons that aren't real, there are movies and videos about sex, and they're not real either. Sex education needs to include porn literacy programs. Porn is not inherently bad or wrong, but it's not created with preteens in mind. When children learn about sex from pornography, there's a problem, and they need to be ready to critically engage with it so they don't wind up feeling traumatized or pressured to mimic it. After all, most kids won't feel comfortable having conversations about porn with their parents. That's not entirely true, said Sophie McBain in The New Statesman. Many young people actually want their parents to broach difficult topics such as porn, sex, and consent, and these conversations must be had before they are given social media accounts or smartphones. A Dutch study showed that children who learn about porn in schools are less likely to see women as sex objects. Yes, it can be awkward at first to bring up these important topics with your kids, but it'll be far more awkward for them to be left to navigate the confusing, sometimes harmful landscape of sex and consent with little guidance or support. One short note, President Biden has had 40 of his nominees for federal judgeships confirmed this year, the highest number since Ronald Reagan's first year in office in 1981. President Trump had 18 federal judges confirmed in his first year, Obama 12. Biden's confirmed nominees include 30 women and the first Muslim federal judge. And we'll finish with a quote from writer John Ruskin, who says, "A man wrapped up in himself makes a very small parcel." And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of the week. I hope you've enjoyed it. Be sure to listen again next time. This is Fred Woodward reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's program is underwritten by the law firm of W.G. Alexander & Associates. Alexander attorneys provide top-rated and experienced legal counsel, concentrating on estate planning, elder law, special needs, and asset protection. Call W.G. Alexander & Associates at 919-256-7000. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The week is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call. That number is 919-832-5138. And as always, thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.